You're listening to the Let's Talk Future podcast series presented by Oppenheimer. If you're interested in the economy, the markets, and investing in general, you've come to the right place. This series was created to fascinate and enlighten every type of investor. Curious about the latest consumer trends? How about innovations in healthcare or technology? The Let's Talk Future series definitely has you covered. Through timely and relevant conversations, we deliver some of the best thought leadership in the financial services industry. Our renowned hosts and guests explore big questions and big ideas and leave you with actionable insights. In this edition, our guest is Tyler Battori, consumer sector analyst and executive director of lodging, leisure, and residential real estate at Oppenheimer. And our host is Jane Ross, managing director and editor-in-chief of the Let's Talk Future podcast series. This episode was recorded on February 13, 2024. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, and welcome back to Oppenheimer's Let's Talk Future podcast. I'm your host, Jane Ross, and in this episode, we're going to talk about housing, which is a big topic for the market, for the broad economy, and certainly for individuals. For most people who own a home, their house is their largest asset. And typically, the mortgage debt that goes along with that is their largest source of debt. And we've been in an interesting environment for some time here with rising home prices, very limited supply, all while mortgage rates are up sharply off their lows. Last year, in May, we spoke with Tyler Battori to discuss his thoughts about all of this, because a lot of this was in place then too. And I'll let Tyler go through his thoughts, but I do want to note that in that conversation, his most compelling investment idea was trading in the low 50s, and it's now around 103. So that's impressive. But as always, the question is, where do we go from here? And let's just get started and welcome back Tyler.
Thanks for that. Great to be back. Thanks for having me. It's a good place to start in terms of mentioning the stock price performance. I'll give my usual disclaimer that past performance doesn't guarantee future results, but we're certainly pleased by how things transpired over the past few months here. And if you look at how 2023 finished out for the housing market in terms of all of the economic data, you see a pretty clear bifurcation here between the new side of the market and the resale or the existing side of the market. And for 2023 overall, there were just over 4 million existing home transactions in this country. That was down almost 20% year over year and the lowest rate since 1995. So lower than COVID times, lower than during the GFC in 2008, lower than the early 2000s in that recession. Obviously, a lot's happened in the last 30 plus years, and this is the worst number that we've had in a very long time. I don't know if enough people realize that or if it even gets enough coverage and attention in the press, but we're arguably in a recession and a depression, if you will, in the existing home sales market. But their loss is new homes gain, so to speak. You have new home sales numbers for 2023 that were actually up 4% year over year. So there's this share shift that's underway in the market, and the home builder stocks have reacted as you might expect in that scenario. And the theme for much of 2023 was earnings revisions to the upside, and the stocks continued to move higher. There was demand that was out there. The builders were able to capture that demand. They were offering mortgage rate buy-downs, incentives, make their homes look even more attractive than the limited amount of existing homes that were out there. The supply chain started to improve as well. So the builders were able to close a lot more homes than investors expected. It obviously flows down to the bottom line. So you mentioned Pulte, PHM, our favorite idea. If you look in the S&P 500,
nice
who would have guessed?
Call.
Thank you. Who would have guessed? Who would have guessed?
You did.
You know, certainly not bad performance there.
Not too shabby. And so that explains a lot of what happened in 2023, existing home sales versus the new supply. As we turn our focus ahead to 2024, it seems like a lot of that stuff is still in place, right? We're still looking at very limited supply. The existing home sales market, that's been not great still also, right?
Yes, exactly. And we think the playbook for 2023 actually looks pretty similar in 2024. And I'll explain why that is. And the real reason why there's not much existing home transaction activity. It's much more to do with supply than actually demand, believe it or not. There's a structural issue here that is impairing the amount of inventory that's available on the market for sale. We've talked about existing home sales for 2023 overall. If you look at the inventory that was on the market in December in particular, right around 1 million homes. I mean, the normal number is closer to 2 million. So it's much lower than you would be in a typical environment. And the reason why nobody wants to sell is mortgage rates. And if you look at the current mortgage rate today, February 13th, you're right around 7%. The average mortgage rate of all outstanding debt in this country is just under 4%. So 3.75% on average. So that means there's a pretty large financial disincentive to sell your home. I mean, if you have a 3.5% mortgage rate, trading that mortgage for a 7% mortgage, that could boost your monthly payment more than 70%. So if you're selling a house right now, it's probably because you really have to. And a lot of people out there want to give up that generational low mortgage rate that they have. And what's interesting to look at here is the spread between the current mortgage rate and where the average homeowner has a mortgage rate. And right now it's over 300 basis points, which is really the widest it's ever been. There was a brief period in the early 1980s where it was at similar levels, but typically there's about a 100 basis point spread between these metrics. So for things to quote unquote normalize, you'd be talking about maybe a 5% mortgage rate, long ways away from where we are at 7 right now. So there's a lot of investors that are talking about Fed cutting interest rates, mortgage rates moving lower, and that unlocking more supply. And it's a possibility, but when you start looking at the numbers and doing some of the math here, whether mortgage rates are 7, whether they're 6, whether they're 5.5, that financial disincentive not to sell is still going to be there, and we think is going to limit the inventory that's out there and going to limit the amount of transaction activity that's happening.
Okay, that was very well said. Thank you. So then that leads us to the home builders, which you were bullish on in May, in the sense of where do we go from here? Is there still room there? And what do you expect for performance going forward?
So we do think that there's room really for the entire sector. And I think it's more than just a multiple or more than just an earnings story. I think it's a multiple expansion story here. And the real reason is that these companies are much different today than they were 10 years ago or even 20 years ago. And we think it's really an industry that has evolved and an industry that's really grown up. And I like to use a company like Toll Brothers to explain this. And it's clean for them because there isn't a whole lot of M&A in their financials. And if you look at Toll Brothers today, where they ended 2023 compared to where they were in 2003, so 20 years ago, they're selling twice as many homes as they were 20 years ago. But leverage is half of what it was. Margin is 400 basis points higher than it was. They own less land outright on the balance sheet. Their primary capital allocation focus is buying back stock. So I understand a little bit of a point in time in terms of this comparison, but I think just puts into perspective where we are today versus where we were. And all these metrics, they don't improve if you don't adjust how you're managing this business. So I think the management teams in this sector collectively, again, they've really grown up, much bigger focus on returns, managing the business, generate more cash flowing. In the good old days, if you will, 20 years ago, there was a little bit more speculation on land. That's not really something that they're doing anymore. And I mentioned just balance sheets really being in great shape. So it's the risk profile for these companies has changed dramatically. But if you look, a lot of the multiples still trade high single digit on a price to earnings basis, which is not that far off from where they were many years ago. And if you compare these companies to other areas of the market, a high single digits multiple versus the S&P at a mid-high teens multiple, I think looks pretty attractive here. So I think there's a real shift underway just in terms of the management, in terms of the return profiles that over time, as these companies continue to report strong earnings, as investors really start to see the fruits of their labor, so to speak, I think it's going to result in higher multiples and eventually result in higher stock prices too.
What's your target for an appropriate PE multiple for this group?
I think something in the low teens makes a lot of sense. And I mean, again, you've had times where they've traded higher, you know, and kind of use the average to get some sort of meaning, but certainly versus where a lot of other sectors are and the multiple expansion that's happened in a lot of other areas. I mean, I think there's just a perception out there. People think, oh, home builders, they're really risky. Didn't a lot of home builders have some problems in 2008, 2009? True, yes. But again, this is not 2008, 2009. And the companies are in a much different position today than they were back then.
Okay, well, that gets us to Pulte Homes. Given everything that you said about the home building group, sounds like you think that there's still more room to go in that company.
We do, and we see Pulte as really the best in breed in this space, if you will. They're in the S&P 500. It's up to $23 billion market cap company. The story for them is really about balance in terms of their buyer mix. So about 40% of the business are entry-level, first-time buyers, but they also sell custom homes to move-up buyers that want more space. About 30% of the business are age-restricted communities. Typically, you got to be 55 or up to live in those, but a good amount of diversification in their business, good geographic diversification as well. So just puts them in a position to capture strength in different buyer segments, strength in different locations at different times. And also given the nature of some of their buyers, especially that active adult customer, makes them a little bit less exposed to interest rate volatility than some of the other companies that are out there. And the results are really proved that out. They've been more consistent with peers. They have the highest ROE and the highest gross margin in the entire sector from a capital allocation perspective, and very consistent in terms of share repurchases. They've reduced the share count by over 45% over the past decade. But pre-Grand Financial Crisis, share repurchases weren't even really a part of the story. So ultimately, we think the business model, the management team should contribute to Pulte having the highest margin, having the highest returns in the space. So $138 is our price target there. That is an 11.5 times multiple.
Okie doke. Well, we will see. Now let's shift a little bit. You know, you talked about the limited supply being a good thing for the home builders and the home building stocks. What about other areas, the building product companies? What are you looking for? I know you cover the repair and remodel space. How do those themes translate into that group of companies?
Yeah, so the supply theme, there's a lot of connections here all over this ecosystem. If you look at the building products specifically, I mean, a lot of these building product companies, they're either selling to new construction, which is their main end market, or they're selling to the home improvement, what's also known as the repair remodel end market as well. So there's a little bit of diversity in terms of the companies and their exposure. And we've talked about the home builders and how well things are going for them and the strong position that they're in. So what you're seeing is home builders want to build more homes because they want to make more money. So a lot of the public home builders are talking about, you know, closings and sales being up double digits this year. You can't hit those targets unless you start building more homes. So, you know, take a step back. When you think of the economic data that we're going to be getting, single family housing starts is a key data set. We think that should see mid-single digits, maybe more growth this year as the home builders start to ramp up, start to get more homes built, try to build more. And the building product companies with exposure to that area are really going to be well positioned because you're going to be able to grow as the home builders are growing too. So it's going to be a nice tailwind for your business. On the flip side of things, the home improvement or the R&R side of things, that's where we think there's a little bit of issues. And again, it's all tied to this limited supply and limited existing transaction activity. And if you really simplify this discussion here, when you're going to sell a house or when you're going to buy a house, there's typically money that you're going to put into property. If you're selling, you might do some touch-up paint. You might repair that leaky faucet in the guest bathroom. Maybe after you buy, you might replace the floors, put in hardwood floors instead of carpet or something like that. And believe it or not, as humans, while you should probably fix that faucet right away or maybe paint more often, You typically don't. And the transaction tends to be a catalyst to really get that going. So with record low levels of existing home transactions, it's really put the brakes on a lot of related spend. You just have fewer people replacing leaky faucets, fewer people installing new floors, fewer people doing touch-up paint. So that's a factor to consider.
Well, and also on that point, didn't we see a big growth spurt in that kind of spending with COVID, right? As people were hunkered in their houses, and has that pretty much happened already? Or
Yes. So there was a significant pull forward. And if you look at retail sales, which is a decent way to measure what's going on in terms of home improvement activity, R&R spends, typically growing about 4% on average per year pre-COVID. The 3 years after COVID, that growth rate was in the low double digits, and nearly 2x the trend. And at the end of the day, people were stuck at home. A lot of people didn't really have much else to do, so they thought, why not undertake some sort of a DIY project to spruce up our house? And you can kind of slice and dice the numbers a variety of different ways, but essentially you had about 7 years of normal spending that was condensed into a 3 year time period. So this pull forward, I mean, look, there's other areas of consumer spending that saw similar dynamics. I mean, travel, people going on vacation, so it is a theme that played out in a lot of other sectors. But what's different and unique about home improvement R&R spend, while you might go on a vacation every year, not a whole lot of people renovate their kitchen every year. And if you spent $40,000 to renovate your kitchen in 2022, you're probably not going to spend that money in 2024. So that's really the problem here. So ultimately, we think home improvement spend, R&R spend, is going to be down this year. And again, a lot of it is really tied to limited supply and limited transaction activity.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. And so, but within your universe of the building products companies, is there anything that listeners should be focusing on and watching as an opportunity?
Yes. So we like Builders FirstSource, BLDR is the ticker there. And they are essentially a manufacturer and a distributor, a supplier of building materials, building products, with a focus on home builders and professional contractors. So about 70% of their revenue is related to home builders, is related to single family new construction. So given our positive outlook on that end market, our expectation there's going to be more housing starts this year, they're well positioned to benefit. It's also a company that's shifted a little bit in terms of their revenue and exactly what they're selling to home builders. They're doing more in terms of offering services, things like installation, rather than just selling a home builder a piece of wood or something like that. It's a little bit more valuable to the home builder. They'll pay a little bit more for that. They also operate in a very fragmented industry. They're the largest player by far, but they still have less than 10% market share. So there's opportunities on the M&A side of things. And if that wasn't enough to convince you, the CapEx portion of this business as a percentage of revenue is really quite low. So they generate a ton of free cash flow. So they can use that to buy back their stock. They can use that for M&A as well. So $220 is our price target there. And that's our favorite name within the overall building product space.
Great. Thank you. And I want to ask you something that I've been reading about. There seems like there's been some increased scrutiny from Washington, D.C., and certainly in the press, with some of these big investment vehicles that have been buying up big swaths of houses. And is that skewing some of the trends that you talked about in terms of limiting supply or boosting prices because these investment vehicles have taken houses out of the market? Is that a real thing that we should be thinking about with your sector?
Yes and no. So it's a topic that is front of mind. And it's one of these circumstances where, the media likes to talk about it, but some of the numbers that they're using are not really quite accurate. I mean, if you look at the two largest institutional owners of single family rental homes in this country, IMVH and AMH, so Invitation Homes and American Homes for Rent. IMVH owns about 80,000 homes. AMH owns about 50,000 homes. So pretty small. But those two companies have bought essentially zero homes off of the MLS the better part of 2 years. So when these articles are talking about these big investors and Wall Street investors that are outbidding normal people, I kind of look at that and I say, well, if you look at the numbers over the last 2 years, like they're not there. They're getting outbid by the normal people. So they're essentially a non-issue. If you run through some of the numbers as well, it's really fairly small in terms of their percentage. So overall pie, about 25% of the available homes in this country are rented, but only 3% of those homes are owned by what we would consider institutional players. So that's anyone that owns over 1,000 homes. So the overwhelming majority of the rental homes that are out there, they're in the hands of one-off people, mom and pops, we call them, you know, they own one or two homes or trying to diversify an investment portfolio or something like that. So they're not really these dangerous, predatory Wall Street firms that are eliminating the American dream for normal people. But to tie this all together, in terms of the limited supply that's out there, they're in that bucket of people that have a mortgage at 3%. So if you have a mortgage at 3%, you're renting that home to someone, you have a good tenant in there. I mean, why would you sell that home? That's a pretty good scenario, right? So that's a portion of the inventory that ties in and is going to continue to be constrained going forward. And that's really the bigger issue rather than some big Wall Street companies outbidding normal people.
Yeah, 3% doesn't sound that scary.
No, it's not.
Thank you for putting that in perspective. Well, listen, once again, really appreciate you sharing your thoughts ahead for us. I'll give you the last word. Is there anything that we missed, or did we cover what you wanted to cover?
No, I think that was very comprehensive. But, you know, I think from a thematic perspective, you know, we're big believers in this residential real estate story. There aren't enough homes, unfortunately, in this country, and the numbers really do vary, but the demographics favor single family renters, single family owners. So it's a space and it's a trend and it's a theme that really is quite positive and I think has legs many years into the future.
Well, there you have it. Thank you, Tyler.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Future. We know your podcast listening options are endless, and so we're glad you're spending time with us. Don't miss out on our next episode, and remember to subscribe today. Join our community to expand your thoughts on business, the markets, and the dynamic forces affecting them. It's time to talk future.